Welcome to everyone on the call, and most importantly, thank you to both new and longstanding members alike for your support for the Arms Control Association. The subject of today's call is the future of New START, and I'll plan to speak for around 10 minutes about the status of the treaty and then turn it over to our board chairman, Tom Countryman, who is acting Undersecretary of State for Arms Control and International Security at the end of the Obama administration, for any additional comments he might have, and to discuss what we here at the Arms Control Association are doing to try and prolong the life of the treaty. Now, while the focus of our discussion will be on New START, the biggest arms control development that occurred over the summer was the U.S. withdrawal from the 1987 Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty on August 2nd, and the subsequent test by the Pentagon 2 weeks later of a Tomahawk Sea Launch cruise missile from a ground-based launcher. The U.S. decision, which followed Russia's flagrant violation of the agreement, has raised concerns about a new, more dangerous phase of global great power military competition, accelerated the debate about whether the United States and its allies should pursue development and fielding of new ground-launched intermediate-range missiles to counter Russia and China, and heightened the urgency of extending New START and promoting arms control options to head off a new missile race, especially in Europe. Here at ACA, we've been heavily engaged on all of these issues and would be happy to discuss them in more detail if any of you would like to do so during the Q&A part of the call. With the U.S. withdrawal of the INF from the INF Treaty, New START is now the only remaining agreement constraining the size of the world's two largest nuclear arsenals. Were New START to disappear for the first time in nearly half a century, there would be no legally binding limits on American or Russian nuclear stockpiles. The risk of unconstrained U.S.-Russian nuclear competition and of even more tense bilateral relations would grow. Unfortunately, the future of the treaty is in serious jeopardy, and the prospects for negotiating a more comprehensive replacement agreement are next to non-existent, at least in the near term. Russia has said it is ready to begin talks on a five-year extension of New START, but the Trump administration is still undecided. And a White House official said earlier this year that the administration won't announce its position on New START until 2020. The U.S. interagency review of New START had been led by former National Security Advisor John Bolton. Bolton, as I'm sure everyone knows, departed the administration on September 10th and has been replaced by Robert C. O'Brien. Bolton said in June and July that while a decision had yet to be made, New START is, quote, unlikely to be extended, end quote. Bolton called New START flawed from the very beginning, citing the fact that it did not limit all types of Russian nuclear weapons or include China. Instead, Bolton said the administration is seeking a more comprehensive arms control deal that includes Russia and China and limits nuclear weapons not covered by New START, such as Russia's large arsenal of short-range tactical nuclear weapons. For his part, President Trump told reporters in August that he has been speaking to Russia about an arms control deal, and that such a deal should include China, and that China is very excited about talking about such a deal. But U.S. and Russian engagements on arms control and strategic stability issues have been few and far between. For example, delegations from the two countries met in mid-July in Geneva for talks on strategic stability, but the talks ended a day earlier than planned. Putin told reporters in early September that, according to him, quote, so far, our American partners have remained silent with regard to our proposals to maintain contacts in the sphere of disarmament and containing the arms race, end quote. And China has repeatedly stated that given the huge gap between the size of the Chinese arsenal compared to those of the United States and Russia, China has less than zero interest in engaging in arms control talks at this time. At the Pentagon, views on the merits of extending New START appear to be mixed. New Defense Secretary Mark Esper has echoed Bolton's criticism of the treaty in stating that New START should include the new long-range strategic weapons Russia is developing, Russia's larger arsenal of tactical nuclear weapons, and other nuclear powers such as China. Former, as of yesterday, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Joe Dumford, said in early September that in the wake of Russia's violation of the INF Treaty, it was difficult for him to say that he supports extending New START. But other military officials have touted the important benefits of New START. For example, the deputy commander of U.S. Strategic Command said this summer that from a STRATCOM perspective, quote, we like the idea of arms control agreements, particularly with Russia, that provide us with some level of assurance that at least a portion of their nuclear forces are capped. He added that Neustart, quote, has a very, very robust verification regime. If we were to lose that for any reason in the future, we would have to go look for other ways to fill in the gaps for the things we get from those verifications, end quote. These arguments in support of the treaty echo those we have been making here at the Arms Control Association. Neustart makes the United States and our allies safer. Neustart caps the size of Russia's deployed nuclear arsenal and provides the United States with information about Russia's forces that cannot be gained in any other way. Neustart greatly aids American military and intelligence planning, and Neustart sustains U.S. global leadership. With respect to the administration's pursuit of a broader agreement with Russia and China, we think doing so is an important and praiseworthy objective, but not at the expense of extending Neustart. So far, the Trump administration does not appear to have a plan or the capacity to negotiate a new deal, which would likely take years. This is especially the case following the news a week or so ago that Undersecretary of State for Arms Control and International Security Andrea Thompson is planning to depart the administration in October, which raises the concern that the real goal of the administration's pursuit of a more comprehensive agreement is to run out the clock on Neustart. But extending Neustart would buy the U.S. 5 years of additional stability, predictability, and transparency. It would also buy time to pursue a more ambitious agreement. Throwing away the limits on Russia's enormous existing arsenal of deployed nuclear weapons, just because it doesn't cover all Russian weapons or include China's much smaller arsenal, would be akin to cutting off our nose despite our face. In Congress, we have fortunately found a largely supportive audience for these arguments. By a vote, for example, of 236 to 189, the House of Representatives in July approved an amendment to the fiscal year 2020 National Defense Authorization Act, offered by House Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman Elliot Engel, that would express the view of Congress that the United States should seek to extend Neustart unless Russia is determined to be violating the agreement or a better agreement is negotiated. Every Democrat, along with five Republicans, voted to approve the amendment. The provision, which is based on a bipartisan bill originally introduced in May by Engel and Representative Mike McCaul, who's the ranking member on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, would also require several briefings and reports, including an intelligence assessment of how the expiration of Neustart would affect the size and posture of Russian nuclear forces and the additional intelligence capabilities the United States would need to compensate for the loss of the treaty's extensive transparency and on-site monitoring provisions. In addition, the amendment would prohibit the use of fiscal year 2020 funds to withdraw from the treaty unless Russia is determined to be in material breach of the agreement. The Senate version of the Defense Authorization Bill does not include similar language, and the House and Senate are currently working to reconcile their differences on this matter and several other nuclear weapons issues during conference negotiations on a final NDAA, and those negotiations are still ongoing. Several senators, meanwhile, are speaking up in support of Neustart. In early August, Senators Chris Van Hollen and Todd Young, a Republican from Indiana, introduced legislation modeled after the Engel-McCaul bill that calls for an extension of the treaty. And in August, 18 senators, led by Senator Elizabeth Warren, sent a letter to the leadership of the Senate Armed Services Committee urging an extension of Neustart and support for the House NDAA language on the treaty. So let me conclude with a few overarching points on the opportunities and challenges facing the treaty as we head toward the new year. First, the good news. John Bolton is no longer National Security Advisor. Let me repeat. John Bolton is no longer National Security Advisor. Bolton had a hammer lock on this file while in the White House and was obviously a key obstacle to a policy process that could support ultimately an extension of the treaty. So his departure from the administration removes a significant obstacle to extension. Second, there is bipartisan support for Neustart, and bipartisan bicameral legislation expressing that support has already been introduced. Third, there is strong support from key military and national security leaders for the treaty. Fourth, there is broad popular support, as well as very strong allied and international support for the treaty. Fifth, there is uniform support for New START extension among the Democratic presidential candidates. And finally, it is important to note, Russia is amenable to an extension of New START. But there are also significant challenges. For example, while Bolton is no longer in the White House, there does not appear to be a strong advocate for the treaty in the White House or at the cabinet level. President Trump has criticized New START in the past. There is no sustained dialogue between the United States and Russia on extending New START or on strategic stability more broadly. Time is running out, and 2020 is an election year, as New START is slated to expire in February of 2021. And finally, we think there is insufficient awareness about what is at stake if New START is not extended, sufficient awareness that we are trying to address through our efforts. Now, a final wild card here, and this is the last point I'll make before turning it over to Tom, a final wild card, and I'll leave it to better minds to attempt to assess how this might impact the prospects for an extension of New START, is the impeachment inquiry that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced last week. Clearly, that is going to consume a significant amount of attention in Congress, a significant amount of attention from the president and from the administration, and how that might impact the prospects for New START, as well as other foreign policy and national security issues, I think remains to be seen, but there is likely to be an impact. So with that, let me turn it over to Tom.
First, let me welcome everybody to the call. I think this is the largest number of people we've ever had on one of these informational calls, and I want to welcome all of you and hope that some of the things you learned today will motivate you to let your representatives in Congress know what you think about New START and about other issues. Just a couple of comments to add to Kingston's comprehensive review of where we are on New START. First, I'm optimistic in part because I have to be, but also because I think there is such strong support for New START in the Congress, in the public, among allies, and among most of the relevant officials within the executive branch. So that's a grounds for optimism that we want to work on. Second, to pick up on Kingston's last point, the current political chaos, dysfunction, conflict in Washington, I think means it becomes harder and harder for the Trump administration to accomplish almost anything in either domestic or foreign policy. And yet, it may help slightly with the case of New START. At least that's what I want to believe, because this is the simplest action that the president can take. It requires him only to decide that he wants to sign the extension, either in a meeting with Mr. Putin or simply exchange signatures by fax. Second, because it is the only step that the president could take with regard to Russia that would simultaneously boost his own standing, begin a process of getting to a more productive dialogue with Russia, and crucially, be welcomed by both parties, not unanimously, but by leaders on both sides of the aisle in Congress. So I hope that those points are sufficient to enable the president to make the right decision here. The other avenue that we pursue in addition to public opinion and congressional opinion is in trying to get all of our allies and friends around the world to make this point directly to the president. If he hears from leaders he respects, whether they are more democratic or more authoritarian, whether they are NATO allies or other friends of the United States, if he hears personally, without the filter of Mr. Bolton or any other official, That new start is important to them, important to their national security, and important to global security. I am hopeful that that will have an impact upon the president. So in my own travels and here in Washington, I've been doing what I can with former contacts in a number of countries to urge them to get that message to the very top president and prime minister level and encourage them to engage directly with President Trump. It's not an issue that he may usually hear about, for example, with the president of Finland, who's going to see him tomorrow. But it is a topic that, if raised that many times by that many people he talks to, he's a guy who gets most of his information through his ears, not through reading. So we hope that that will have an impact. That's all I want to add to Kingston's excellent review. Tony, now you're going to moderate Q's and A's, and we'll keep going on those for about 40 minutes.
Yes. First question is from Sharon John.
Hi. I'm in support of extending the treaty, but there are a couple of big concerns. Russia has violated the INF since, 2008 to 2014, and that was with IAEA inspections. And yet China is sometimes, and I do emphasize sometimes, coordinating with Russia, and so they can still do the, all these missiles, and they have additional constraints on them. And there would be constraints on us. And the third part of the question is, because the whole question is, I'm nervous about New START working very well. The third would be, there's so many immediate concerns, China, but the hypersonics and so on is outpacing our treaty so quickly, that can you speak to any of those? The violations, are we going to be certain about verifications? Can we hold back under that treaty when China, a cohort, and others, Iran, if they get that good, can outpace us, perhaps? Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Those are good questions, and they speak to some of the motivation of the Trump administration in trying to bring China into some form of trilateral arms control. But on the first question about verification and Russian compliance, I am deeply concerned about the Russian action that brought about the end of the INF treaty. I think the U.S. could have handled that much better. But INF is different from New START. There are no indications that Russia has violated the New START treaty in any way. In fact, the two sides have exchanged, since the treaty went into effect, more than 10,000 notifications about every time they move a strategic asset, either a delivery vehicle or a warhead. And without New START, we simply lose both the verification and the on-site inspection, where U.S. officials can go to Russia and see exactly what they're doing. So I hate to blind our intelligence community in that way. It's important to note also that when the Russians in the 1980s were violating the ABM treaty, President Reagan did not pull out of that treaty, and he did not stop the negotiations that led to the INF treaty. Rather, he said, we've got to have strong verification. And that's what we achieved in the INF treaty. As far as China goes, I spoke about this at some length in a hearing that the House Foreign Affairs Committee held on July 25th. And you could find that online or on the ACA website. China does have an ambitious military program. It only spends half as much as the United States on its military, but it is trying to catch up in a number of technical fields, the same technical fields that the U.S. is working on. And in some of those, they may be slightly ahead of the U.S. They displayed yesterday, or maybe it was today, some new hypersonic vehicles in a military parade in Beijing. But China still is in the minor leagues compared to the United States and the Russian Federation, with somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 nuclear warheads, as opposed to the more than 6,000 each that the U.S. and the Russian Federation possess. There's no good reason for the Chinese to participate in arms control when they are the smallest kid in the block among the three of us. And again, I explained that at some length in this hearing. We do have to be concerned about a military threat from China, but that military threat is not at this moment primarily nuclear, nor has the administration come up with any kind of proposal that would draw the Chinese into such a discussion.
This is Kingston. Let me just add a few thoughts on China to what Tom said. I mean, I think, as I noted, it's an important and worthwhile objective to try and start a dialogue with China on arms control and strategic stability, and try to bring it into a future arms control framework. But I think there are more practical steps that ought to be pursued in the near term, short of trying to actually include China in New START, which is going to be nearly impossible to do. And so I think some near-term objectives might include convening strategic stability talks with China on a bilateral basis, perhaps inviting China to observe an inspection of New START, maybe even pursuing trilateral strategic stability talks with Russia and China. And I think even a treaty, an extension of New START between the United States and Russia would put pressure on China to take some of those steps that I just mentioned, as well as to perhaps more ambitiously provide more information about its nuclear weapons and fissile material stockpiles. And I think it would also be reasonable to ask China, so long as the United States and Russia to continue to make progress to reduce their far larger and more capable nuclear arsenals beyond New START, to perhaps freeze the overall growth in the size of its nuclear arsenal. So I think those are some more practical near-term objectives for engaging China on this front than trying to limit its forces and to include it in New START.
Our next question comes from Dr. Edward Levine.
Good afternoon. Good to hear your voices. I have two questions. First of all, on the matter of getting foreign leaders to encourage the president to extend the treaty, I wonder where the East European countries stand, because some of their leaders are perhaps more influential with the president than some of the larger powers are. Secondly, I wonder what one can do to structure the situation such that President Trump would conceive of extension as a victory for something rather than as giving in to people who liked an old treaty.
Thank you, Ed. Those are two good questions, and especially the first one I haven't thought about enough. I don't know, for example, where the leader of Poland, who has an especial affinity between himself and President Trump, where he stands on this. I think NATO has attempted to make clear in the North Atlantic Council that they are united on the value of New START, but whether leaders in places like Poland, Hungary, Romania would make that clear to the president, I just don't know. So that's something you've motivated me to look into. On the question of how to make it more appealing to President Trump, clearly one of the obstacles is psychological, his obsession with President Obama and his determination to undo whatever he can that Mr. Obama accomplished. I think that there's ways around that, and we have tried to make that clear to members of Congress who may have the ability to speak to the president. And that is that President Trump and President Putin, as they sign the papers that extend New START, can easily sign an additional piece of paper, could be just one or two pages, that is a declaration about their determination to improve relations and to set targets for further reductions of nuclear risk, reductions of nuclear weapons. It would not be a treaty, but it would be enough for the president to claim that he had improved upon New START. And personally, I'm willing to nominate him for the Nobel Peace Prize if that's what it takes to get him to do this, is to add the two pages. The two pages will not be as important as the treaty itself, but it could cement, in at least in his own mind and among his followers, his reputation as somebody who is seeking to avoid war. So I think that's the right way to do it. I am very concerned, as Kingston described, about the lack of experienced officials in the executive branch right now who will take the time to do that. Over.
Our next question is from Dr. John Burroughs.
Yeah, thank you for the informative briefing. Can you make some more comments about the provision in the NDAA that is being supported by the House? What do you see as the value of the study they're seeking? It seems like time is getting fairly short for a study to be done and then to have an impact on decision-making. What do you see as the prospects for that provision in the negotiations? And is there something beside the study in that provision that could have, you know, operational significance?
Thanks, John. This is Kingston. Let me start with that one. And so with respect to the status of that provision and negotiations between the Senate in the House on a final version of the bill, I mean, I'm reasonably optimistic that while, you know, the final version of the bill will not include the sense of Congress language in support of extension and probably not include the provision that would prohibit funds for withdrawal, which is more of a messaging provision than having, you know, a meaningful operational impact, as you described. You know, I am hopeful that the reporting requirements, which I'll get to in a second, will remain in the final bill, and perhaps some language that speaks to the benefits more broadly of arms control to U.S. national security and how arms control agreements in the past have contributed to U.S. security. I think you're right that, you know, the time is running short, but I think the value of these reports would be in accentuating the national security case for the treaty, specifically the implications for both the intelligence community and the Defense Department if New START were allowed to expire with nothing to replace it. So on the intelligence side, the reports are, you know, driving at the question of, you know, there would be significant additional resources that the intelligence community would need to expend to make up for the loss of information that is provided by New START's monitoring and inspection regime. So trying to put a value on the loss of that information, I think would emphasize the importance of retaining the treaty and the costs of allowing it to expire. Same for the reports trying to assess whether the United States, in the absence of New START, might need to increase the size of its nuclear arsenal if Russia chose to do that in the absence of the treaty. and how would that and how that would impact the costs of the already crushingly expensive U.S. nuclear modernization program. So I think those reports, and I think it's possible that they, you know, can be completed by early next year to still have an impact on Congress's thinking on the issue and the administration's internal debate. I think that information would help to raise the costs to the administration of not extending the agreement, and I think provide additional fodder for not only Democrats, but for those Republicans who might be partial, who might be favorable to an extension, but to date have been unwilling to step forward to publicly support that.
Our next question comes from Lieutenant General Frank Klotz.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you, Kingston, for that excellent presentation. The question I have is, as Kingston pointed out, President Putin has said that Russia is amenable to extending the treaty and has expressed concern at U.S. lack of interest in it. But at the same time, he and other Russian officials have voiced concern about how the United States chose to render two of its long-range systems incapable of conducting nuclear operations in order to reach the central limits mandated by the New START treaty. So my question is, if the U.S. administration chose, which we hope they will, to pursue extension of New START, just how serious are the Russian concerns? How likely are they to be a sticking up point in actually getting to an extension? And in this regard, if you were advising the U.S. delegation how to deal with this particular issue if it comes up, what would you suggest?
Tom, do you want to start on that one?
Yeah. Thank you, Frank, and thanks especially for what you've written and who you've spoken with in support of the New START Treaty. The Russian concern is, I think, a mixed bag. It is partly serious, and it is partly a response to the U.S. position of reluctance and the U.S. statement that we have to account for new Russian weapon systems in New START. So it's got a double purpose there. The Russians, however, have been, as far as I can tell, very clear that the concerns about the conversion of a couple of U.S. strategic systems, these are concerns, these are questions, they are not preconditions. They want to discuss these before New START is extended, but they have never said that these must be resolved to Russia's satisfaction before New START is extended. If I were advising the U.S. administration, I would advise even this administration to lean forward, to be forthcoming, to offer all possible information and potentially on-site visits to allow the Russians to see that the U.S. modification of those strategic systems has rendered them incapable of delivering strategic warheads and therefore should not be counted under New START. That's probably more than the current administration can bear, but I think the alternate advice I would give that should be possible for this administration is go ahead and extend New START. It gives you five more years to work out the Russian concerns and the American concerns, and ideally to move beyond both of those. Over.
Our next call is from Robert Fry.
Thank you very much. The ambassador mentioned the idea of a signature of two pages would at least begin the process or continue the extension. My question is, if we arrive January 20th, 2021, and there is a new president, would that be feasible that the new president and Mr. Putin could simply sign a two-page
document, because you have until February. I mean, you're never going to negotiate everything, of course, but at least the intention would be there. Is that something that would work for you in terms of what you've recommended?
Yeah, if all they do is sign a paper saying we both agree on a five-year extension of New START, then they don't even need any additional pages. Then we're good to go. So if we get all the way there without the Trump administration having done anything to extend it, but also without the Trump administration having done anything to kill it, I think we'll be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, this is Kingston. Just to follow up on that, I mean, if we get to, say, mid-2020 and the administration has yet to make a decision on extension or decided not to extend, I think it will be important to, focus on persuading whoever the remaining at that time Democratic presidential candidates to signal that he or she will not increase U.S. strategic nuclear force deployments after New START expires if Russia does not do so, and to signal that they are interested in extending the treaty and negotiations on whatever implementation issues there might be. Because when the new president is sworn in late January 2021, that will only leave about 2 to 3 weeks before the treaty is set to expire. So I think it will be important for the Democratic presidential nominee. Obviously, that person needs to win the election, but to begin signaling that the United States is interested in extension, is not interested in increasing U.S. nuclear forces above New START, and is open to dialogue with Russia on issues related to implementation and of course, follow-on arms control measures.
Question comes from Guy Quinlan.
With respect to the argument, which one hears frequently, that the Russian violations of the INF Treaty are the reason for not extending New START, I wonder if it would be possible to turn that around. Is it not correct that the original inspection and verification provisions of INF were for a term of, I think, 15 years or something like that, and were allowed to expire? But obviously, it's a quite different situation from the robust verification provisions in New START. Indeed, I wonder if you could argue that allowing the verification provisions of New START to expire would create precisely the same sort of danger. Arguably, the Russian violation of the INF might never have occurred if the verification proceedings provisions had been extended.
Yeah, I think that the INF verification procedures were no longer needed. They didn't expire. They just weren't exercised after all those missiles were destroyed. And so the consultative commission that is meant to discuss issues of implementations of INF had no practice on any issues for 25 years. And that became part of the problem, that we didn't have a means to go back to the previous inspections. I wish that the U.S. and Russia had been more creative in looking for such a means to use the INF inspection mechanism to deal with what was essentially a new problem. But neither side had the imagination to attempt to do something meaningful in that regard.
Our next question comes from Greg Thielman.
Thank you, Tom and Kingston, for your presentations. In light of the fact that some of the opponents of New START extension have referred to some of Putin's Wunderwaffen as new type weapons that were not anticipated by New START and are not covered by the treaty, I wondered what your view is of the best defense against those charges. And I'm thinking, for example, of the long-range land attack nuclear torpedo, the nuclear-powered cruise missile that Putin has either demonstrated or alluded to.
Yeah, those are two of the wackiest ideas for weapons I've ever seen, and I've seen a lot. They are at least as dangerous to their manufacturer as they are to the opponent. But they seem to be driven by a Russian paranoia that somehow the United States is going to overcome all laws of physics and develop an impenetrable ballistic missile shield that would negate Russia's strategic deterrent. I think the Russian fears are very much overblown that the U.S. can ever achieve that. But it speaks as a side issue to the need to get back to real strategic stability discussion. And whether there are reasonable limits that would remove that incentive for Russia to come up with those kinds of crazy missile shield defeating weapons. The U.S. should certainly talk about those weapons until New START renewal. And once New START is renewed, we will have a more solid basis to talk to the Russians about how to count those weapons under New START and ideally under a future agreement. But I can't agree with those who say that the Russians have violated New START or made New START less meaningful because of their attempt to create these new wonder weapons.
Yeah. Greg, this is Kingston. I agree with what Tom said. Extending the treaty would buy five additional years to address Russia's development of these new, novel, exotic, dangerous weapons. I think what I would add is that, number one, at least a couple of the weapons that new weapons that Russia is developing, namely the Avangard hypersonic glide vehicle, it's not clear to me that we can't get Russia's agreement pretty quickly to count that under New START, especially if it's going to be deployed on first SS-19 ballistic missile or later the still under development Sarmat ballistic missile. In which case, if the glide vehicle is deployed on a ballistic missile, it ought to count not as a new kind, but as a new type subject to the treaty. And perhaps that could be part of a kind of New START plus agreement that could be used to convince President Trump that he wasn't just extending an Obama-era agreement, but was, in fact, getting something more than that. And then the second point I would make is that with respect to all of these systems, they are either going to be deployed in very small numbers, i.e. be niche capabilities, or not deployed at all during the period of a five-year extension, which would get us out until 2026. For example, you mentioned the nuclear-powered flying Chernobyl cruise missile. Given all the test failures that system has encountered, I'm dubious that system will be deployed by 2026, to say nothing about being deployed in actual meaningful numbers. So we ought not to free Russia from any limits on its still enormous arsenal of existing strategic nuclear forces, because we are concerned that Russia might deploy a small number of new strategic weapons over the next 5 to 10 years.
Thank you.
We have two questions remaining in the queue in the next 10 minutes before we wrap up our call. Our next one comes from Angelo Francesca Cassia.
Good afternoon. So we know that the new START has been largely criticized. And taking this into account, my question is, if the new START was not was not renewed. Could a new embedder treaty be signed? And if so, which aspects should it cover in order to be defined a complete and efficacious agreement? Thank you.
Well, that's a good question. Yes, New START can be improved upon, and President Obama made proposals after New START was concluded to say, let's look at the next category of weapons, which is non-strategic nuclear weapons, so-called tactical nuclear weapons, so-called small nuclear weapons, although the definition of small means only about half the size of Hiroshima. That is certainly a topic ripe for discussion. The Russians maintain a stockpile of about 2,000 tactical nuclear weapons. The U.S. has about 1,000, and they are potentially destabilizing because they could be used in an escalation from a conventional conflict to a nuclear conflict that could lead to all-out nuclear war. So that's a topic ripe for discussion, but so is ballistic missile defense, which the United States has refused to engage on or to acknowledge is a serious topic for limitation in all of its discussions with the Russians, going back to the Obama administration. My view, and I know that there are people who will disagree, is that you have to put all of the strategic systems on the table and discuss all of them, including missile defense, if you're going to get to a new stable equation between U.S. and Russian strategic forces. I don't see anything like that happening in the remainder of President Trump's term, but I am hopeful that a different U.S. president at some point would be able to accomplish that with the support of allies and with the support of the American people.
Okay, we'll move to our final question now. Ahmed Hassanawan.
Hello, everyone. I just have a comment and a view regarding the willingness in Russia to extend the treaty itself. What do you have to say about that? Is there any mood in the Russian camp, optimism with regards to the extension of the treaty?
I believe the Russian government is quite united in its desire to see the treaty extended for the same reasons that the U.S. government should see it in its interest for extension, that it provides transparency. It provides an upper limit on the strategic arsenals of the two countries. It makes military planning easier. All of the same, and it saves money, of course, if you don't get into a new strategic arms race. And for all of those reasons, I have not heard any significant dissenting voices on the Russian side. The hesitation is, it seems to me, entirely on the United States side.
Our final question comes from Randy Riddell.
Thank you. I have actually two questions of relating to two different kinds of processes. The first one is interagency, and the second one is international. On the interagency process, given the huge role that Bolton played in the treaty review process here internally, what will be the effect of the new National Security Advisor O'Brien, given his lack of background on arms control issues? What effect will his introduction to this process have on the internal process? And secondly, with respect to foreign leaders, there's an ideal venue coming up soon. In the middle of next year, there's going to be a 2020 NPT review process, a review conference, and this will be a golden opportunity to rally international support behind a treaty extension. And I was wondering if this could be a good venue for working on that problem.
All right, thank you, Randy. Just a couple quick comments to wrap up our conversation today. First, John Bolton essentially terminated the interagency process, not just on arms control, but on all issues, in favor of himself keeping tight control over the options and opinions that went to the president. Whether Mr. O'Brien is going to revive the kind of purposeful interagency process that the NSE has long been charged with conducting, I don't have any information yet whether or not they will do that. If he does, then I am hopeful that there'll be a more rational discussion, ideally a simple one-page memo of options and content that will help him make progress. As far as international, I absolutely agree that the 2020 Non-Proliferation Review Conference in the spring next year is an important milestone. It should be one that leaders can still point out to President Trump that if the United States and Russia have not extended New START by that point, it will be have a very negative effect on the and will con.
Unfortunately, I believe we have lost Tom Kingston.
So I would just echo what Tom was saying, Randy, about the importance of the NPT review conference. It certainly is an opportunity for states to strongly, forcefully, clearly make the case for extension of the treaty, both to the United States and both to Russia, and how, you know, internationally, failing to extend the treaty would be perceived. And in the event the United States and Russia don't extend New START, and there are no legally binding bilateral agreements limiting the size of the U.S. and Russian nuclear arsenals, I think states can make the case that the United States and Russia aren't meeting their obligations under Article 6 of the NPT. So yes, the upcoming review conference is an important moment for states to make the case for extension, given that it will come in, you know, May of 2020, less than a year until New START is slated to expire. I wanted to thank everyone again for joining the call this afternoon. I wanted to thank you in particular for your continued support for the work of the Arms Control Association. Your support makes the work that we do, coordinating NGOs in support of New START and prolonging the life of the agreement, in attempting to, in the coming months, augment our media and advocacy work in support of the treaty, as well as the engagement that we do on Capitol Hill with both Democratic and Republican staff in support of New START. So we can't thank you enough for our support. We will look forward to doing additional calls in the future on not only this issue, but also other key nuclear weapons risk reduction issues that we are working on that face similar challenges as the challenges we're facing with respect to U.S.-Russian nuclear arms control. So thank you again so much, and enjoy the rest of your afternoon.